My friend Vaughn was summoned as a witness in a trial, and to say the least, he was reluctant to do it. Not because he was privy to some critical piece of information. The reason he didn't want to do it was he didn't want his words to be turned into a pretzel by some slick lawyer. So he shared his concern with an attorney friend who gave him this advice: when you are questioned, answer only yes, no, or I don't know. Do not elaborate. Be careful of what you say, or the other attorney will make hay. Questions of lawyers can be tricky. Since she is not here, I can share another aspect of my wife's life, and that is that at a very young age, she was in love with an attorney, Perry Mason. He's probably the reason that she has spent most of her career working in law offices. And ever since Perry made his debut, there have been so many court and lawyer series over the decades. We could stay here and name quite a few of them. One of the most popular has been Law and Order. Any Law and Order fans? The original Law and Order shows were great. Then they had all those spin-offs, and you couldn't keep track of which Law and Order you were watching. And you remember how all of those programs started? In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups: the police, who investigate the crime, and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories. And then, the coolest riff, gotta turn it up. You remember? Let me do that again. And the cool notes at the end. You remember that? That was such a cool show. But you know something? Every time one of those courtroom dramas is on, I watch Sue and her eyes roll. Because those shows resemble reality as much as a chirping cricket represents an opera singer. But I do like those shows from the standpoint that it shows all of the maneuvers that we use to avoid answering difficult questions. Think about your favorite courtroom show, or think about investigative reporting shows like 60 Minutes. Yeah, I remember a classic example of this from a Texas politician who was asked where he stood on a hot-button issue, and he said, "Well, some of my friends feel this way about it, and I have other friends who feel that way about it, and as for me, I am with my friends." Or you may have heard a couple of weeks ago that one of the presidential candidates was asked whether anyone in his family or any of his close associates had ever had to struggle firsthand with the abortion issue. And he said, "That is a very interesting question. Next question." There are lots of ways that we can respond to difficult questions. You can answer by choosing not to answer. You can act like you never heard the question. You might answer the question with a question. "Why didn't you tell me?" "Well, why did you need to know?" You can change the subject in an attempt to redirect the questioner. And politicians are masters at giving an answer that goes something like this. You know, I am glad you asked that question, because what we need to do is, and then they launch into this rehearsal of points from their stump speech and don't answer the question at all. When we're asked tough questions, there is a temptation we all face to either dip or duck or dive to get away from it. But when the one asking the questions is Jesus, the strategies do not work. You either say yes or no, I will or I won't. He won't accept I don't know. Early one morning, on the shores of the Sea of Tiberias, soon after Jesus' resurrection, Jesus appeared to the disciples, and he put a question that put Peter in a pickle. But before we get into that conversation, let's pay attention to some other important things that lead up to that. Now, at the very end of John 20, verses 30 through 31, we read these words. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you may have life in his name. Now, when you hear those words, he performed other signs which are not recorded in this book, what does this sound like in the flow of a story? Doesn't it sound almost like a conclusion? Well, there are some biblical scholars who say this, in fact, was the original end of the Gospel of John. It stopped at 20. You believe that the leaders of the early church were uncomfortable about only getting 20 chapters. They considered the story incomplete. They didn't like the conclusion because it put Peter in a very unfavorable light. He hadn't exactly distinguished himself back in chapter 18. After Jesus' arrest, you know that he denied Jesus three times. I don't know who you're talking about. I never had a thing to do with him. You're mistaking me for someone else. And if the story ended with chapter 20, well, things would not look good for the beloved Apostle Peter, the rock upon which the church was built. Now, the scholars say there's something else going on that influenced the creation of chapter 21. In addition to trying to salvage Peter's reputation, there was a heretical group called the Docetists, who were spreading a contrary teaching within the church. The Docetists believed that Jesus was not a human being. He was not human in any form at all. He was a pure spirit. When he walked, he did not leave footprints. And so John, or the 21st chapter of John, wanted to leave no doubt about Jesus. He told Thomas to poke a finger in the hole in his side. He built a fire. He roasted fish. He ate with his disciples. And the text from our reading today says Jesus showed himself in this way. And then it flows right into Peter saying three words that are music to my ears. Let's go fishing. Count me in. You know, it had been 3 years since Peter had picked up the nets and had brought in the fish that were his trade. And now he wasn't sure what to do. Jesus was resurrected, but they didn't know where they were going next. Let's go fishing, he said. Now, some people say that was out of a kind of cynical thing, that there's no hope anymore. I might as well go back fishing. Or is he just needed to wet a line? So He took six disciples with him, and they fished all night. And you know what happened. They got skunked. But there was a guy up on the shore who had been watching them, and when they pulled the boat ashore, he said, "Children, have you got anything?" I said, "No, we got skunked." Now, just to let you know, when a fisherman will never say that he or she has been skunked, only that they have run out of time. But in this case, they were skunked. And he said, "Why don't you go out and put your nets down on the starboard side?" They had nothing to lose, so they did as he said. And you know the story. When they hauled in the net, it was bulging with fish. Now, when was there another story in the Gospels that is just like this one? When did it happen? Louder? When, right at the beginning of the story, when Simon and James and Andrew and John were called to be disciples, they were fishing all night. What happened? They got skunked. What happened? Put the nets down on the other side. Now, back then, Peter was Simon Peter, the son of John. And Jesus pulled him aside in our story today and asked Simon Peter, "Do you love me more than these?" And he couldn't pretend he didn't hear. He didn't say, "Would you please repeat that question?" He didn't stall for time. He didn't answer the question with a question. Now, it all depends, Jesus. What is love? No, he had to declare it, yes or no. "Simon Peter, do you love me more than these?" "Well, you mean, do I love my fishing stuff more than you?" A couple of weeks ago, Gladys Squires was in a talkative mood. She asked me, "How many fishing rods do you have?" And I told her the number, which you may think is ridiculous. And she said, "You should have two more." And I said, "Gladly, Gladys. I will tell Sue that you said that. I don't have too many yet. I can justify two, maybe three more." And after I left Gladys's room and going down the hall, I heard a voice said, "David, son of Joe and Ruth, do you love me more than these?" "These what? You mean the rods? You mean the six tackle boxes? You mean the boat with the motor?" "Oh, of course, Jesus. I love you more than these." And then he noted that I hesitated before I answered the question. "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Jesus probably wasn't referring to the equipment. "Of course I love you," Simon explained. And Jesus asked him a second time, "Do you love me? Do you love me more than these?" And this time, he's probably talking about the disciples. "Do you love your brothers more than me? Or do you love others? Or do you love me more than they love me?" It's not clear. And so the third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" And he was tempted to say, "Are you deaf?" Instead, he acted wounded. "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." I want you to see their boat coming ashore now. The nets are bulging with fish. And on the shore, there is this stranger who has started a fire. Where else in the Gospels does a fire figure predominantly in the story. Outside the fortress where Jesus was being interrogated, there sat Peter warming himself around the fire. The glowing charcoal he looked at as he denied knowing Jesus. Three times he denied knowing him. And on the shore, Jesus is standing with Peter, and there's a mention made of the coals, of the fire that he had made. And now Jesus gets to ask three times, "Simon, son of John, do you love me? Are you sure this time?" And Peter could not dip, he could not duck, he could not dive. "Yes, Lord, I love you." Then Jesus said, "Then stick to your own kind. If you love me," interpret outreach as writing a check to organizations that you believe in so you won't have to get your hands dirty. "If you love me," then adopt a vision that won't expect too much of the people. "Oh, I love you, Lord." And Jesus said, "Then be sure you spend more money on yourselves than on the ministry to others." "Lord, you know everything. I love you more than these." And then Jesus said, "Spend whatever is necessary to preserve your building so that you'll have a church to come to." I didn't hear any amens. Okay, Jesus never said that. He said no such thing. But we act as if he did. Three "I love yous." You know what that got Peter? "Feed my sheep, tend my sheep, feed my sheep, and two follow me's." Jesus said, "If you love me, do what I would do. Do what you said you would do at your baptism. Be a shepherd. Be willing to sacrifice yourself if necessary to care for my flock on my behalf." "Oh yes, Lord, you know that we love you. And I'm seeing shepherds at work every day with Ariel as Marty and Peggy trade shifts in being with that dear woman around the clock." Peggy took a week of vacation to work everything out for Ariel. I'm not saying this to go pat them on the back and say what a wonderful job they're doing. I'm saying this because they're feeding the sheep. They're making sacrifices in order that Ariel can live, really live like she has never lived before. Now, one thing about the net of the fish, 153. Don't ask me the significance of that number. Let's just say they exceeded their limit. And Jesus didn't seem to care in the least. There are all kinds of fish in that net. These are the fish we are called to gather in the net of Jesus' love. And if you love him, you stand with people who serve him. If you love him, you care for people who don't have a voice. If you love him, you will be a shepherd to those who have strayed. I came across a poem written by a guy named Thomas Lux. It's called "I Love You, Sweetheart." And it was inspired when Lux saw a spray painted message over a highway overpass. You know, one of those that said, like, "Farley loves Frida." And what struck him about the graffiti was the foolish, absurd risk that the person with the can of spray paint took to leave the message. He probably hung upside down with two of his buddies holding on to his feet, and he says, "What would motivate somebody to do such a stupid thing?" As the band Queen said, it's a crazy little thing. It's called love. And this is the conclusion of his poem. A man risked his life in order to write these words. Love is like this at the bone, we hope. Love is like this, sweetheart, all sore and dumb and dangerous, ignited, blessed, always, regardless, no exceptions. Always in blazing matters like these, blessed. Thank goodness that the church gave us the ongoing story. Thank goodness we have chapter 21, because Peter was not defined by his denial of Jesus. Thank God for the rest of the story, that he bid farewell to those failures when he professed his love for Jesus and he did what Jesus said. Peter fed and tended the sheep. He preached the message that we are forgiven and restored and renewed because God so loved the world. He grew the church in a single day by 3,000 and 5,000 with his sermons, and he never took a course in preaching. He spoke the truth to power, and when he was told to shut up, he refused. Do any of you know the traditional story of how Peter died? The Romans crucified him, but he said he was not worthy of being crucified as his Lord and Savior. And so Peter was crucified upside down to show that it is only by the power of the upside down love of Jesus that our disoriented world will ever be turned right side up. He didn't hang from a highway overpass. He hung from a cross upside down to speak to his fellow disciples and the disciples of all the ages that we, as shepherds, feed the sheep, tend the sheep, feed the sheep, follow Jesus, follow Jesus. And proclaim his message of love to our upside-down world, because we, serving in his name, are upside-down people.